Lloyd with Morgan streaking. She's chipping the goalkeeper.
The pay disparity between the men and women is just too large, and we want to continue to fight. The generation of players before us fought, and now it's our job to keep on fighting.
The pay cap for the women's Major League Soccer players is 11 times less than the pay cap for men's Major League Soccer. 11 times.
Rapinoe gets a crossing. It's towards Wolfman.
You're listening to Give and Go with Rotas Wadera, only on Girls Soccer Network.
What is up, guys? This is episode 71 of Give and Go. I am your host, Rotas Wadera, and thank you so much for making the choice to listen to us at Girls Soccer Network. Of course, for all the latest and greatest news, analysis, lifestyle, everything from the world of women's soccer, go to www.girlssoccernetwork.com. Check us out on Instagram at Girls Soccer Network or on Twitter at Girls Soccer Net. And of course, if you want to listen to this show, just tell Siri, hey, I want to subscribe to the show. I want to listen to new episodes of this show. Again, Give and Go, Give and apostrophe Go. And again, please share, subscribe, give us feedback, anything to help us out, please. We want to get out the content that you guys want to listen to. Of course, if you want to give me a follow on Instagram, it's at @rowindatas25, rowindatas25. Check me out, guys. I will follow you back, I promise. We have an amazing episode planned for you, episode 71. The interview is a special guest, Eva Gaetino. We spoke to her. She was named an All-American just a few months ago and is already scoring goals with PSG in the Champions League. So it's a really, really cool interview. We got to speak to her kind of before she had signed. So this is a unique perspective that we're going to be able to bring to you guys right before she'd signed with PSG. Of course, we got to talk about the NWSL and how incredible it's been through the first 3 weeks of the season as we go into the international break. The She Believes Cup is coming up. We'll talk about that. We have the Emma Hayes, Jonas Eidevall situation, which was a lot. We will get into that and unpack that. And then, even bigger probably, which we will also get to, is Corbin Albert. And the post on social media, of course, she has apologized. And we saw Megan Rapinoe release comments as well. But all I'm saying is we will get into that as well. A lot of great stuff to get into. I think we have to start with the story of the season through the first 3 weeks, which is the Kansas City Current. First off, the stadium looks incredible. CPKC Stadium, like to see women's soccer supported in that way and to see a stadium like this that is solely just for women's soccer, it's incredible, and you're already seeing the benefits. Okay, opening up the season, 5-4 win over the Thorns. Incredible, incredible performance. And then they go to San Diego and pull off a win there and then come back home and win again. So they're undefeated in their first three games. It's looking like CPKC Stadium is going to be a fortress for them going forward. So if you're the Current, if you're a Current fan, excuse me, like, strap in for this year. It's going to be an incredible year. They have a chance to go for the Shield. I know it is early, but like I said on the last episode, Vlatko Andonovski has something to prove, and he's going to do that, as seen by 3 wins in 3 games to start the year. It's kind of like a flipped version of what the standings we thought were going to be. Chicago, unbeaten as well. Lauren Donaldson doing an incredible job getting this team tactically ready. They're taking their chances. They look great. 2 wins and a draw. Coming from behind to draw against Orlando. So the Red Stars are off to a phenomenal start. The Courage are doing what they normally do. The Spirit we'll get to in a second. I definitely wanted to talk about the Thorns first. I don't really know what to tell you. I hope that this isn't an ownership-related change, because the Thorns would never start a season this poorly. You'd have to go back a long time to find a year where they started this poorly. No wins in their first 3, just 1 draw, 2 losses. It has not been great to start. And so, yeah, they were even losing. I mean, to be losing to Racing Louisville at home, a place that you've defended so well, to give up two goals in the first 10 minutes, clearly they did not address the defensive issues that they have had. That is going to be a problem later on. If they don't get that fixed soon, like, the Royals are ahead of them in the standings. Like, let's get that right. Ali Sentner is looking like the real deal. Croy Bethune is looking like the real deal. Like, we have, the league is in such an incredible place right now, guys. Like, we have the young talent blossoming. We have the stars doing what they're supposed to do. There's just so much going on. The Pride and Racing Louisville, three draws in three games. That's hard to do. Not going to lie, three draws in three games is pretty hard to do. But overall, the table looks kind of how you'd expect it. Angel City also getting off to a slow start. That first game was brutal against Bay FC. It was in attendance for that. It was an incredible atmosphere, an incredible game for the league. Bay FC gets a historic win. But then Angel City just couldn't take any other chances. Angel City should have won that game, but Bay FC did just enough. And then if you stay in the league long enough, right, you're going to have some heartbreak and some pain inflicted upon you. And that's what happened to Bay FC as Houston stole their home opener away from them and spoiled the party with a 3-2 stoppage time winner. So, again, some great, incredible results around the league. What I do want to talk about was the game of the week recently, which was the Washington Spirit versus Utah Royals game. Did a quick little video blurb. I hope some of you guys saw it, previewing how it's going to be a showcase for the number one pick, Ali Sentner, number three pick, Croy Bethune, and the number five pick, Hal Hirschfeld, for the Spirit. I left her out. That's my bad. But all three are looking like great players off the bat, already making an impact for both of their teams. And if you got the chance to watch that Washington Spirit game, Trinity Rodman, man, if she is going to play like this, the crossing, the assisting to go with the ability to get around defenders, she's really going to become unguardable if she stays on this trajectory and continues to stay unpredictable. And that's what she said in the halftime interview, that she's just looking to be as unpredictable as possible and mix it up, like knowing that defenders want to get around her and go 1v1, knowing that she wants to get around defenders and go 1v1, you can see that now, and teams are going to give her that cushion to not get past her. And so what does that open up? That opens up the cross into the box. And her cross to Olamide Sarr was just spectacular. And Sarr got up and attacked it. And if Rodman's able to provide that quality of crossing to go with her finishing, the sky is truly the limit for her. She's going to be scary. And she's stepping up. Ashley Sanchez is gone, which means she's had to step up even more, and she's doing it. So for her, at her age, to be the leader of the team and to really be the creator offensively is huge for Washington. So that from that side of things, you have to be incredibly excited, and Croy Bethune is living up to the hype in every single way. Scoring, drawing fouls, creating penalties, spreading the ball around. She can do everything. So you guys need to be keeping an eye on her. There was another moment, though, from the game that I have to talk about. There was a challenge from Dana Foderer that VAR looked at for a long time. A long, long time. And the fact that it was determined to be a yellow card is horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible. And it sets a bad precedent for this league. Because now, this challenge was knee-high, okay? I don't know on what universe that is not a red card. The fact that they spent all that time looking at it and still deemed it that way makes me question something. Like, was that, did a call come in from the front office saying, we can't afford this, this is the match of the week, we need ratings to be good, so don't send her off, let's give her a yellow card. Like, what if that was the call? We don't know, because that to me was as blatant of a red card as you're going to see. And they spent multiple minutes looking at it. They spent a long time. There were 13 minutes of added time at the half because of how much time they spent looking at that tackle. So to not send her off, I thought was ridiculous. And then this, you know, the Royals come back and score and it's 2-1 and all of a sudden it's a game, right? All of a sudden now the game becomes more watchable because instead of being 1-0 up and down to 10 players, Now it's a completely different ball game when you have that extra player still in the game and you're able to fight and do a little bit more. So again, now the next time that happens, for player safety purposes, you're essentially saying we don't care about the player. Their career can end on a horrific challenge, and that'll be that. Like, when you're basically saying, well, only once it happens are we going to do something to prevent it rather than getting ahead of it, because that was just an absolutely horrible, horrible challenge. And just playing in the whole game, and it was crazy. Fodor had chances to tie the game herself. Like, she should not have been on the pitch and had the chance to tie the game multiple times. So just a crazy, crazy situation in that game. The Spirit did end up holding on for the win at home, as you'd expect, but what a crazy game of the week. Next, we have Sophia Smith getting a huge deal, making her one of the highest paid players in the NWSL. So you would assume her contract is up there with all of the players who just got paid, i.e. Trinity Rodman, Rachel Quintanangi, Cicero Shoala. I'm sure they're all getting big contracts, and Sophia Smith's is in that same realm. I found it very interesting the way that she chose to word her statement about that, I don't believe that I need to go to Europe in order to get where I need to go. And I understand that. I guess maybe other people are saying that, but I didn't realize that that was the intention behind it. I don't think people are saying you need to go to Europe to find yourself and become a better player. I think it's just to experience something new and to see another style of play and to get used to playing in another style of play, to expand your horizons and expand what is possible within the lines of the game. That's why you go overseas, for a new experience. You need to experience it at least once, and that's why the U.S. Women's National Team players will go overseas for at least a year or two. Lindsay Horan is still there. She prefers it, as you can see. She's been at Lyon. She likes being around the best. The best of the best are at Lyon. And by simply associating with them, simply being around them, she's going to get better. So for Sophia to say, yeah, I don't need to go to Europe, that's all well and good. But I think at some point, like, it would be beneficial to take that step and show what you can do abroad. Nobody's saying that you're not ready for this opportunity or that you can't perform there, or none of that. I just thought it was a strange way to word it. I mean, of course, we're happy, thrilled that she's staying in the NWSL. Thank God that she's staying. Like, the league needs her. The league needs a star like her, for sure, for sure, for sure. So it's amazing that she's choosing to stay, that she's choosing America over Europe. I thought it was just worded strangely. Like, I didn't feel necessarily a need to take a dig at Europe in that sense, like as if their style of play isn't worth it for me. Like, that was kind of how it comes across. I know she didn't mean it that way, but that's how it comes across when you kind of word it that way. I don't need Europe, you know what I mean? So I thought that was very interesting. But again, Sophia Smith is staying in Portland, and that is a huge, huge deal. All it does is really keep the NWSL relevant, because she is easily the league's most recognizable face. Maybe second to Alex Morgan, she is probably the most, got to be the most recognized player. Her, maybe Trinity Rodman. Okay, so within two or three, Sophia Smith's that important for the NWSL, for the Portland Thorns, and for the U.S. Women's National Team. So her staying stateside, she knows what she wants, it's what's best for her, and we support you. All right, we have a very special interview with Eva Gaetino, who is the former star of Notre Dame, multi-time All-American winner, and has now signed with PSG and is doing great things over there. You're not going to want to miss this, guys. Here it is. Enjoy. We are with Eva Gaetino, the two-time All-American coming out of Notre Dame. Eva, how are you doing today, and how does it feel to be named an All-American again?
I'm good. It's such an honor. I was so excited to hear that I made the first team. It's definitely nice to, you know, see all your hard work kind of come out and on the other end. And although I'm sad to leave college, I'm excited for what's next.
On top of that, one thing I have to mention, and I think it's another really amazing aspect of VO, is you were also named on the Scholar All-American team and named Scholar All-American of the Year. What does that mean to you to have that also on your amazing resume on the field?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably my greatest accomplishment in college. I think it's what I'm the most proud of. I was pre-med, and I was doing essentially a business supplement major in addition, and graduated in 3.5 years. So I worked very, very hard. And at Notre Dame, like, it's a really challenging school. So seeing all that and, like, getting that award, it truly means a lot. And I'm very, very proud of myself for that.
Now, you saw your post on Instagram, just how much Notre Dame means to you. Just tell us more about how tough of a decision that was to go pro, and just what are your favorite memories from Notre Dame?
Yeah, Notre Dame truly is such a unique place. I was actually talking about it with my dad last night. It's just, it's hard to put words to it. It's such a community. Everyone looks out for each other, and it's a very difficult place to be. It's South Bend, Indiana, not the nicest place in the world, but, you know, like, you make it through, and you learn so much, and it's just such, like, I would not change my experience there for the world. I'm so grateful I decided to go there. Leaving Notre Dame was a really hard decision for me. I truly loved my coaches. I loved my team. I loved the school, but I just knew that it was time. I just had this feeling that it was time to close that chapter, and I'm so excited because I feel like Notre Dame has given me every single tool I need to step out into the real world, be an adult, and continue on my journey. So I'm very excited about that and grateful to Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you're one of the more decorated defenders to come out of college over these last few years. How much weight or importance do you place on those individual awards as compared to the success you've had with Notre Dame as a team?
Honestly, the individual awards are interesting to me because I'm very, very proud of myself, but for me, what mattered more was, like, the team, always the team. I'm incredibly grateful for my individual awards, especially because I went into college as an attacker. I was not a defender going into college, so it was great to see that, like, I was able to learn so much. But I mean, like, I was most proud of myself and the team when we made, like, Elite Eight, and when we had big wins, and when we were able to come together and really perform as a group. So I think that the team accolades, seeing my teammates do amazing things, get awards, get drafted, like, that all, like, honestly is more valuable to me than the individual awards. As grateful as I am for them, I really am just happy for everyone else because I know how much work everyone else is putting in, and yeah, it's nice to see.
And what would you say are your strengths as a player, and what are some things that you're looking to improve on in your game?
Yeah, I think obviously being 5'11", aerial game is something that I think I dominate in, just tracking balls and finding them and being able to compete in the air. I also think my range of pass is improving a lot as I've gone through college. One thing, or a couple things I would love to keep working on is just, like, 1v1 defending, moving my feet, like, switching hips, all that stuff, and just decision making, reading the game, reading the cues, always being a student of the game, stuff like that.
And what would you say you're looking forward to most as to become a professional player?
Yeah, I think I'm just excited to learn and to grow. I mean, I really feel like I have not reached my ceilings yet. I've only been playing center back for really 3.5 years now, so I feel like I still have so much more to learn, and to be around such experienced and decorated players and learning from them and getting to play against the best of the best, I'm excited to take all that on and learn as much as I can.
And your name was in the draft. Yes. And you were sure to be a top 10 pick, and then you pulled your name out of the draft.
Yes.
So talk us through kind of your current situation right now.
Absolutely. I think leaving college, it's a scary thing, and you really don't know what to expect. So I registered for the draft, and a dream of mine has always been to play overseas. I've had a couple trips overseas growing up. I went with Adidas to Lyon one time and to Real Madrid. So I got to experience those cultures and those that environment, and it's always something that has been so interesting to me. And I really feel like I wanted to explore that. So I was so grateful for the opportunity to go on trial with PSG in France. Last week, I actually flew here from France, which was hard. I'm still, I don't know what time zone I'm on right now, but certainly it's not this one. So it was an incredible experience. And after that trial, there's been some interest from some clubs in Europe, and I'm just trying to finalize and pick what's best for me. So I had the confidence to withdraw from the draft, and I'm hoping to return at some point to the NWSL. I think they're doing amazing things right now, and I'm excited to return, but at the same time, I felt like this wasn't something I could turn down going overseas. It's amazing.
So many of our young players are listeners to these podcasts, you know, that look up to players like you. What would be something that you would want to tell your younger self as you look at yourself right now?
I think one thing that I didn't realize is how much sacrifice it takes. Birthday parties, family events, vacations, like all of those little things. Like, I think I went to one high school homecoming. I didn't have a prom. I graduated a year early from high school, and it was COVID, and it was just a disaster. So I didn't get a high school graduation. I didn't get a high school prom. Just all of those like life moments that, you know, you see in the movies, and they're so romanticized. Like, you have to really think about what you're willing to give up and how badly you want it, and being okay with that and really accepting that. And I can say right now, it was worth it. It was hard, but it was worth it. I'm very happy I sacrificed as much as I did.
Amazing. Okay, so this is a really off the cuff question, but I just have to know. So you say like those things that we get romanticized all the time.
Yeah.
100%. There's some weird parts about college soccer and some tough ones. What's probably the thing that you didn't like that you had to start romanticizing a little bit to make it work?
Yeah, definitely getting home from away trips on Sunday night at like 2 a.m. and then having to go to my 8 a.m. calculus class the next day. That sucked.
I love it.
But you get used to it. It's part of the grind. You're in it together.
American athlete.
Yeah. That's discipline. Yeah, that is...
You got to do it.
Amazing. I love it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Wow. So, of everything what would you say is kind of like that moment for you that clicked and you said, I can make this into a pro career? Like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah. I mean, growing up, like, I've always wanted to play professional soccer. I've always, looked up to Mia Hamm, Carly Lloyd, like, all of these U.S. national team superstars. And I had a little Mia Hamm book when I was, I forget what it's called, like Winners Never Quit or something like that. Yeah. It was like a little picture book. I read it like every single day when I was younger. And so it was always like a thought in the back of my mind. But once I stepped onto the college stage, I think it really became like realistic in a way. Like, it was like, okay, I can actually do this. Like, I can do this, and this is what I want for myself. This is what I want out of my life. And then dedicating all that, the work to it and working towards it every day, it really started to come more and more to fruition as I went through college.
Again, that is Eva Gaetino of PSG. Now, to give you a little more context, again, this is one of the best college players of the last 3 to 4 years, won about every single award that you could win, ECC Defender of the Year, All-American Awards, everything. And there was murmurs, is she going to put her name into the draft? Is she not? What's going to happen? Ultimately, she pulled her name out of the draft, and that was kind of, again, part of what you got to hear in that interview was her decision and why she chose to do so. And now we're getting to see her blossom at PSG. Not, she's starting games, she's playing in games, scored in a Champions League game. Like, to go from potentially being a top 5 NWSL pick to saying no, betting on yourself, going to Europe, playing for PSG and already making an impact there is incredible, and it is what has gotten her called up to the She Believes Cup roster. So we're going to get to see a little bit more of her and see what she's got. And again, we can never have too many defenders with this injury situation that we've had on the back line for the U.S. Women's National Team. So if she's able to come in and become another go-to player, another go-to defender at the back who we can count on when needed, Gaetino's got a ton of potential. She can really be another bona fide starter for this team as we look to rebuild into the next generation, right? If we're going to create our next golden generation, it's about identifying young stars like Gaetino who have the potential to blossom into even bigger international stars. And Gaetino fits that mold completely. So monitor it. It's coming up. The She Believes Cup is right around the corner, which is honestly the perfect segue to get into the She Believes Cup, because not only is Eva Gaetino in the roster as a big surprise, you've got Lily Johannes, the 16-year-old who is now with Ajax and has, again, I think the youngest player ever to start a Champions League group stage match. What is Lily Johannes? And so, again, the youth movement is here, man. We're seeing it everywhere. I talked about it last time. Kennedy Fuller looks ready for the moment for Angel City, is starting games now. Clearly, they're going to let her go, give her free reign, and let her develop. So as more and more NWSL teams do it, we're also going to start to see the U.S. Women's National Team do it as well. So Lily Johannes is going to be a player to watch for sure. You are not going to want to miss out on what she brings to the table. I'm assuming, I mean, I haven't seen too much of her, but I'm assuming she's great on the ball and can dribble and pass and is a wonder kid in every sense of the word. You don't just start a Champions League match if you're not good. So it's going to be really exciting to see what she's bringing to the table. And then you have Katarina Macario and Mallory Swanson coming back after two injuries. Now it sucks, and we will dearly, dearly miss Mia Fischel and Midge Purse, both out of the team going back to the Gold Cup. And now we bring in Macario and Swanson, who had injuries of their own and are now coming back. So it's almost like this revolving door of injuries that the United States have had to deal with. And as two more key players leave, two even more key players come into the team now, because you look at what Swanson brings and the way that she was in some of the best form of her life before the injury. So to get her back, big for, again, club and country to get Mallory Swanson back. And Katarina Macario, her all-around versatility gives the United States just another wrinkle, a different look to their attack. She isn't just a sprinter who goes at defenders. She can do a little bit of everything, can distribute, can score from long range. She really is a key piece for this team as well, for what the United States can do tactically. They can play differently. They don't have to stick to one style, one formation, one way of winning when you have a player like Macario in the team. Otherwise, most of the team is unchanged. And, you know, they just played Canada and Brazil at the Gold Cup, and they beat both of them. Brazil in the final, Canada in the semifinal. So, again, not too much time has passed. I'm not sure how much changes in those two matchups. The United States should be able to get the job done again. Of course, the Canada match likely won't be played in a monsoon where the pitch is entirely wet. So that'll likely be a different fixture this time around. But again, you'd expect the She Believes Cup to stay on American soil. It's a cup I think they've only lost once or twice. Once was to England, and other time, maybe, I'm not so sure, maybe it was Spain, maybe not. But every other time, the United States have been She Believes Cup champions. So the matchup with Japan is the one to watch. And I've mentioned it many times before, Japan are masters at picking apart your weaknesses while playing to their strengths. They will create that type of strategy to where if you fall behind against them, or if you aren't disciplined, or if you just have a mental lapse for 1 second, they will exploit you and they will make you pay. So they are probably the toughest team for this group to look at and say, hey, how far along are we as we prepare for the Olympics. This competition is a great litmus test for that. Whoever made the schedules, like the schedule this time has been perfect for leading up to the Olympics. First, we do the Gold Cup, kind of like lower level opponents, plus some really good ones. Now the She Believes Cup is exclusively three really good opponents and simulates more of what they're going to see at the Olympics in terms of a group stage format. So this is a really important cup to see where the United States is at going into the Olympics this summer. So expect the United States to win. Expect them to play good football. Expect to see Mallory Swanson make a big impact. Not sure how much of Katerina Macario we're going to see, but expect Mallory Swanson to be back in a big way in the She Believes Cup. All right, now we're going to get to some of the juicier stuff, the drama that has been ongoing in the world of women's soccer. There were two major moments that have gone down in the last week that I really couldn't stay away from. I had to talk about it. One was Corbin Albert. What an insane 24 hours. We're talking Corbin Albert comes under scrutiny for liking or I believe sharing a post that was pretty transphobic and not okay at any stretch of the imagination. Not cool to be sharing that on your social media, kind of letting the whole world know where you stand politically on that matter. And honestly, it's never okay what you did. And there should be outrage. There absolutely should be a ton of outrage. Megan Rapinoe, of course, responded. Corbin Albert came out with a response saying that that was never okay and she apologizes. I don't know how genuine of an apology it is. What's even crazier is that after the news came out, she played in a game and scored and then probably found out afterwards that she is under complete and total scrutiny for what she did. And that's got to be a wild situation. At the same time, still wrong, still not okay. And there's nothing defensible about that. The one thing I will say is this, though. If you were to probably go through the rest of the league, like, don't go searching. Don't go looking for other players to make who make political statements. If you're going to cancel them, like, there's going to be a lot of people in the league. There's going to be way more people that you think that have Corbin Albert's mindset and beliefs on that subject. The same beliefs that Corbin Albert has, there are going to be plenty of players in the league right now who are against y'all. I'm just saying it how it is. There are plenty of players who Jalen Daniels, of course, with her Christian beliefs, didn't have much of a career after she spoke out about said issues. You want to know how to tell who is an ally and who isn't? All you need to do is watch the tape. Go back to when the NWSL was protesting and kneeling for the national anthem when Pino was taking that stand. And there were all those players who either had family members who were in the military or people where they wanted to stand because they have an appreciation for the military, but I still love my teammates. I guarantee you those people that stood up for the national anthem and did not take a knee are the ones who are likely going to have some political views that you are not going to be happy with. And so I'm just telling you right now, like, we can't go on, like, if we go down this rabbit hole, you're going to find, like, there won't be a league left. There's going to be enough players rooted out of the league to where, yes, okay, there are always opportunities, there are always spots available, and more players will come in. But if it's going to be like this, I don't know. Like, all I'm saying is just prepare to be surprised. You're going to see some players' names come up where you're like, oh, my God, no way. They actually are transphobic? That can't be possible. But it will be, I'm telling you. You just need to be prepared for the situation at hand here. We saved the best for last. Emma Hayes, Jonas Eidevall. Emma Hayes, Chelsea manager, Jonas Eidevall, the Arsenal manager. Let's give you the backstory first. Apparently, this has been a rivalry that's been brewing from day one. from the moment Jonah Idaval showed up, I believe, first match they played against each other, Arsenal scored, Jonas hits a knee slide naturally. If you were Emma Hayes, that wouldn't sit well with you. Come on. Any competitor here that's listening, if they just showed up in their first game and the team that they're managing scores on you and they do a knee slide with the first goal, one, that's a little excessive. One, it's going to irk you. Okay, so that's kind of where this whole thing started. They have a little bit of beef with each other. Now, going into the match, there was a bit of a spat over the ball system. Do we use one ball? Do we use multiple balls when the ball goes out? Do we have the option to use multiple balls so that we can get play restarted quicker? Apparently, when you can't agree, again, I think Arsenal wanted multi-ball, Chelsea wanted one ball. And so when it's like that, you just, apparently on default, you go to one ball, the one ball system. So one ball is used for the entire game. Then in a Continental Cup final, Arsenal scores in the 116th minute. Chelsea have 4 minutes to try and search for an equalizer. Aaron Cuthbert runs towards the sidelines in a rush to try and get another ball. And naturally, Jonas Idaval is naturally not going to let them enforce the rule because that was the rule they had decided on. And so you can see it's an emotional moment. Cuthbert is, again, everyone's just emotional. That's the biggest thing, right? Cuthbert wants to get the ball in because they're trying to tie the game. They do not want to lose a cup final. Manager's looking at her like, this is what you guys agreed on. And then Cuthbert steps toward Idaval. She steps towards him. Okay, if you've seen the video, look it up. She steps towards him. He probably did say something, okay, to her. But for her to step toward him, that's where this whole thing starts to get fishy. And then for Emma Hayes after the match to push him and say, use the term male aggression. Oof. We have opened up a can of worms. Pandora's box has just been blown wide open. Because you guys know what I'm going to say. If it was flipped, and if it was a dude pushing a woman, this would be, it would be front page news. It would be everywhere. It would be the worst thing ever. If it were two guys managing or two women managing, I think it wouldn't be as big of a deal. Like, we've seen plenty of managers get into spats on the sideline, okay, before and after the games. It can get heated. It's an emotional game. It happens, okay? But the fact that it's a man and a woman, and the woman has now used the term male aggression, right, that kind of seems a little charged there. Making it, again, using the term male. If she just used aggression, I think she's probably okay. But the second you use the term male aggression, now we're getting into gender, and now we're getting into a man versus woman thing, when really it's not about that. It's just about Chelsea were losing in the moment. They got emotional, and they let their emotions get the better of them, and they said some things that they will, that are, I don't know if they are going to want to take it back or not. I don't know, but still. Yeah, that's kind of the situation. It was just, again, end of the game. Nobody wants to lose a cup final, especially to your rival. Things got a little heated, and we've all at one time or another said something in the heat of the moment that we have regretted. Something that we wish we could take back. So, I don't know. It's a very interesting situation. Emma Hayes is going to become the U.S. Women's National Team manager, and I'm interested to see if she will face anything for this, or if more people are going to be on her side. But to me, the situation was clear. Like, they were just losing, and they got emotional. That's all. I don't think it needs, again, to be blown out of proportion, but the thing is, it will, because it's Emma Hayes. She's as high profile as it gets, and it was a push that really, I think, shocked people. So this is a very, very unique situation, and we'll have to see how it develops. I do think there should be some type of scrutiny placed on Emma Hayes for doing that, because watching it back, there was nothing that indicated male aggression. I'm going to be 100% honest with you. When Cuthbert steps towards him, that is what can be seen as aggression. She stepped towards him. He in no way, shape, or form took any step towards her at all. So, you know, people are going to... That's the other thing, is that people are going to spin it and look at it how they want to look at it. So if you're on Emma Hayes' side, then you're probably going to disregard a lot of what I said. And if you're on the other side, then you're going to, you know, find the facts and paint them the best way you can. I'm how I look at it is, yeah, you agree to a rule before the match. And now when the rule does not suit you and you're trying to come back, now you want to change the rules. That's not okay. Bottom line, you can't do that. You can't do that. So, my rant is over, but that was honestly a huge, huge moment from over the weekend that we had to talk about. Alrighty, that is all that we have for you today on episode 71 of Give and Go. I am your host, Rotas Wadera, and thank you so, so much for making the choice to listen to us at Girls Soccer Network. Again, for all the latest and greatest news, analysis, lifestyle pieces, go to www.girlssoccernetwork.com. Check us out on Girls Soccer Network on Instagram, at Girls Soccer Net on Twitter, and give me a follow on Instagram at rowindatas25. Twitter as well, actually. Both, I will follow you back. Hit me up. Let me know if there's anything we can add to the show. But otherwise, it's been a blessing doing this with y'all. 71 episodes in. Amazing. Peace.